All righty. Thank you all for coming. I'm going to actually be pretty brief here. My name is David Duggar. I'm the executive director of the Washtenaw Educational Options Consortium, and that's a very unique educational entity in this state. The WEOC functions essentially as a school district formed by the school districts, and WEOC functions as the employer. And so WEOC basically functions as a school district to provide educational programming to all of the districts and the students in this county through unique, innovative educational options that are difficult for schools themselves to create or develop. There's four programs in WEOC. There's the Washtenaw International Middle Academy. There's the Washtenaw International High School, which is ranked either two or three in the state of Michigan in terms of high school. Those are both IB schools. That's a combined grade 6 to grade 12 building. Then we have the WAVE program, which is the Washtenaw Alliance for Virtual Education. And then we have the Early College Alliance at Eastern Michigan University. The Early College Alliance at Eastern Michigan University was started by me and a few other people in 2006. We started planning it. We went live in 2007. Prior to that, I was the principal and the associate dean of Washtenaw Technical Middle College at Washtenaw Community College, and my background really is heavy in early middle college programs. I have served in multiple capacities, not only in terms of consulting and starting up early middle college programs in Michigan and Alaska, but these two, and the two programs that I've directly overseen, Washtenaw Technical Middle College and the Early College Alliance at Eastern, we've done since 1997 between those two programs when I was running them both about 170,000 dual enrollment credit hours. So we have a pretty good idea how to prepare students for college in these programs. In a typical year at the Early College Alliance, they enroll in about 3,200 courses at EMU, anywhere from 7,500 to 8,200 credit hours. And they pass them with a rate of C or better about 90% of the time. One of the things that makes Washtenaw Educational Options Consortium unique is that we have this capacity to invent things. We have this capacity to sort of experiment and grow because we're in the system, but we're outside of the system. We have very different educational problems to resolve, from an IB middle years program to an IB diploma program to an online school, a blended hybrid school, to one of the largest early middle colleges in the state and one of the very few that's connected with a four-year university. To make these things work, you have to constantly be thinking differently about what is the educational problem that we have to solve. And the educational problem that we solve is not graduating from high school. The educational problem that we solve is preparing the students for something that we actually don't control. I call them third-party validated programs, meaning that your performance is evaluated essentially in real time by an entity that you do not control. That's actually a fairly frightening idea for most people in public education. But our programs can't function that way. Every 15 weeks at the ECA, they get a report card. And that's the performance of their students in college courses. And when you're enrolling in over 3,000 courses a year, this isn't like one-offs. These are systemic data that you now have. IB, if you're familiar with IB, IB is, there's a lot I like about IB. There's some things I kind of chafe at a little bit with IB. But ultimately, you're preparing the student to take and be successful in the IB diploma exam, which leads to potentially IB diploma, which is the only internationally recognized high school diploma in the world. Why? Because it's graded through IB standards with what is a real traditional model that we don't do in the United States, but what the rest of the world does, which means that your final exam is graded by somebody who is anonymous, does not know if the student is a male, female, or anything. It's just a number. And they're graded against the international rubric to tenths of points. So you don't have the capacity to sort of which a lot of educational entities do, make adjustments at the end of something. This doesn't happen in these programs. We actually have to prepare students for something that we ourselves do not control. Well, one of the things that in the process of doing this, and this idea of inventing things and thinking differently, is this really unique problem that Ava started to work on at the ECA. And every year, I host a party at my house for all the employees of WEAC. We have about 115 employees now. And two Christmases during the holiday, Caitlin is at the party. She was a new teacher, and she was staying very late at the party. And I got to talking to her, and I said, "You have to see Ava." And I said, "You have to hook up with Ava because she's doing some work that really aligns with what you're talking about." And then this past spring, I am on the Michigan School Testing Conference Planning Committee. I was talking to the committee, and I said, "Yay, we're doing this kind of cool thing at the ECA. I don't necessarily know if it would fit, but it's really fascinating." And everybody goes, "Totally. We want a presentation on what you're doing at the ECA." So talked to Ava, talked to Caitlin, and I said, "You guys are doing a presentation?" They go, "Oh, okay." And they've been working on it for the last year or so. And really what I'm going to sort of leave it up to them is sort of Ava's baby. She's sort of apprenticing Caitlin to an extent. But it really is a way to sort of look at how can you sort of turn the grading process inside out to really look at how can you sort of look at creating a mechanism that's growth-oriented. Because as we start to move towards standards-based grading, thinking about growth, what happens is students themselves still struggle with what does that mean? How do I internalize that? What does it mean to grow? They still have traditional pushbacks on things. And this is really sort of an inside-out way to sort of reinvent that dynamic. All right.
Can you guys hear me okay? All right. So first of all, thanks, Dave, for that awesome introduction. My name's Ava Spint, and I'm one of the math instructors at the Early College Alliance, which is the early middle college that partners with Eastern Michigan University. And I'll go into the details about this research that we've been working on for the last few years, but I wanted to get a show of hands to better tailor the discussion around what potentially I could help you guys with if you wanted to do this program in your school. So my first question to the room is, how many of you guys are classroom teachers? Raise your hand. All right, how many of you guys are math teachers? All right, how many of you guys are administrators or work at the superintendent level? Okay, so we're about half and half. Interesting. I have done this conference presentation for teachers mainly, and then a board of superintendents. But in general, I'm going to give it to you from the teacher perspective. And if you have any questions at any point in time, feel free to interrupt. I'd be happy to answer throughout. And we'll also have time at the end for questions as well. So with that being said, I have been at the ECA for 5 years now. And this research project is almost 5 years old at this point. And essentially, thank you, Caitlin. Before coming to the ECA, I worked at a vocational technical school in Maryland, and I saw a lot of common themes with the students that I interacted with at my old school, as well as with the students that I was encountering at the ECA. And specifically in my classrooms, but I had this reiterated from anecdotal evidence from other teachers, students have a tendency to have predictable performance. So students who perform pretty well at the beginning of the semester usually perform pretty well by the end of the semester. And students who are not performing well at the beginning of a semester usually are on track to not doing well by the end of the semester. And without any type of intervention, usually this behavior doesn't change or potentially gets worse. So with that being said, let me hit the slide. There was this big problem, and I'm sure many of you guys have read the research behind this mindset idea. The Early College Alliance has these major mission, visions, and values that hopefully help students progress into college classes. And we focus not only on mastery of skills that relate to the content that we're teaching, but we also like to deal with these soft skills. So the skills that you need to be successful with in order to do well in your college classes in the future. But one of the big soft skills and one of the big visions and values that we have within the ECA is essentially the mindset behind your success in classes. And many researchers have pointed specifically to the mindset within the classroom in the math context, in the fact that students who have fixed mindsets in math classrooms often do not progress with material and they're doing poorly. And students that have growth mindsets, even if they're weaker skilled, can make bigger gains. So at the ECA, as Dave so beautifully outlined, we're encouraged to try and tackle these problems in different ways in the context of these bigger values that the ECA shares between any teacher or advisor. And what I was noticing specifically with this initial collection of data, obviously, is that students who started the semester off poorly had this mindset that was reinforcing this negative reaction to success, as well as just generally trending towards not doing well in the course. And usually what students would see, sounds like they're having a party next. Usually what students would see and feel is that at the beginning of the semester, they'd take their first test and be like, oh darn, I bombed it. I'm not a math person, or I'm not good at math. And then that would cause them to put in less effort with studying and homework completion. Then they take their second test and it went poorly, and then that just reaffirms the thoughts that they originally had. And then it just kind of goes in this downward cycle for these students that start the semester off not in a great place. Whereas students usually who do well at the beginning of the semester think, hey, I'm a math person, I can master this material, they put in more effort, and they usually perform about the same at the end of the semester. I'm gonna have you hit the slide. So in general, 5 years ago, the big questions that came out of this initial dive in data was essentially, how do we fix that mindset issue? How do we intervene with students that are identified as at risk? And how do we essentially click the button one more time, change the trajectory of their progress? So there were two major thoughts that came out of this initial analysis. And the first one is essentially, how do we actually stop or even reverse this failure to master content? And if possible, can we actually get these students to learn more that they would have in a traditional grading system? The second thing, which was harder to address, and I'm still working out some of the kinks, but the second thing is, how do we actually change a student's mindset so that they're not only mastering more content, but they're also set up for more success later on in their college classes? So that they can think, I am capable of this, I have a growth mindset, and I can learn math outside of the ECA. So I'm going to give you guys essentially the rundown of how the system is implemented at the ECA and all the data that I've collected on it for both of those research questions, and then Caitlin's going to take it over for her side with the YHI program. And just a heads up, growth-based grading, I like to abbreviate as GBG. So if you want to start a hashtag, feel free. So click one more. And I am so sorry about the quality of these PowerPoint slides. I'm under the impression that you guys have access online, and the text is a lot easier to read, especially with the images. I'll also give out my personal contact information at the end. So if you need any resources, or if you need this slide for your personal collection, let me know. But I will do my best to kind of vaguely describe what they're supposed to say. So what happens with this essential alternative grading system? So at the point of when this research project started a few years ago, this was the initial setup for how I started the program with certain student groups. It has morphed over the semesters based off the questions that I've gotten from conferences, as well as the attendees that participate, as well as it has shifted to essentially address other things that I'm potentially trying to analyze. So with this being said, for the most part, this is the general idea, but there are specific details that have changed over the course of the years that we've been collecting the data. Regardless, so at the initial stages of this research program, what I did was specifically identify at-risk students within the ECA programs in my classes at the point of the midterm, which is about 8 weeks into a 16-week course. And in general, the ECA likes to categorize students who are doing well in classes with the traditional grading system of A, B, and C for grades that are above 75. And then everything else below that is given a special qualification like LCR. So you're earning credit, but you're not really prepared for college classes, or you're not earning credit, you're doing badly, not only in the context of your soft skills, but also your grades. Question?
I'm very sorry. Is there a chance you have a mic?
Oh. Does this get louder?
Is it close enough to you?
We'll go up higher.
Need to move it up a little bit.
It's not you. It's the party room.
The party room. Should we have a competition? See if we can get louder than them?
Better?
All right. Let me know if for some reason this decides to die and I'll start yelling. Any other questions so far? All right. So in general, when it came to identifying at-risk students, I use the ECA's cutoff for how we distinguish students that are usually doing well and students who are not doing well, and that for us is a 75%. Why high?
It's a 70% where 70. We're at, which kind of distinguishes that exact point.
So in general, you guys would potentially classify at-risk depending on what your school needs or outlines, but for me it was a 75%. And in general, what would happen after the midterm, I would send out this special invite via email and say, hey, you're selected to participate in this alternative grading system. First of all, it's completely voluntary, but I've been noticing some general trends with your progress, and I really think that maybe we need to start thinking about your progress in a different way. Please come to this informational session during lunch. And in general, what would happen is that the students who wanted to participate in this alternative grading system would come to this information session during lunch, and I give them a one-page handout that outlines my goals for this program. I will get it up onto the website soon. It didn't get uploaded for some reason. Let me show it to you. I think you can even read it. But it looks something like this, and it outlines the general progress of the growth-based grading system that the students will be participating in. And students would then have the opportunity to ask questions about what would happen, how this would impact them, etc., during this information session. So what I would tell them during this information session is specifically what they could expect from me, as well as what I could expect from them for the rest of the semester, which was approximately 8 weeks. And in general, the growth-based grading system focuses on the idea of transitioning this end result of grading, so how did you master material, to how much progress did you make that with that material. And how I would do that is essentially I would send them a tailored personal growth goal every single time we had an assessment. So for the ECA, we do regular, usually weekly assessments with standard-based grading for the most part. And every week they would have this email from me saying, hey, based off of what I've collected on you so far, this is what I think you're capable of doing this week with a personalized growth goal. And in that email, I'd state the goal, as well as what I think they should be doing to meet that goal. My requirement from them was that they needed to respond to that email within 24 hours, usually saying, hey, Ms. Bent, got your email. I will do this, this, and this to make sure that I meet my goal. And it didn't have to be anything detailed, just an acknowledgement of specifically them getting the email, understanding it, and then thinking a little bit about how they're going to progress with that material. And I told them, and this is the magic of the grading system, I said, if you meet your goals for the rest of the semester, I will literally change your grade at the end to at least a 75%, to kind of lift this weight off of their shoulders and say, focus on the growth, and I'll make the grade happen if you need it. But the ECA also likes to respect a final exam score really well in the fact that we weight it heavily, and sometimes teachers will say this is your only score. So usually with that grade replacement, I didn't actually end up having to change their grade. They earned usually a 75 or higher with this rethinking of their progress within the class. So for the most part, I think I've had almost 1,000 students participate in this research, and I think I've literally changed 3 of them, okay? So in general, for the most part, students aren't actually having me change their course grade. They're earning this course grade. Questions so far? All right, Caitlin, hit the space button for me. So how did I collect data? How did I make sure that students were growing, meeting their goals, as well as essentially tracking student progress? I have Excel documents that collect all of this information from post-assessments to pre-assessments and diagnostics. And in general, what it does is essentially track their progress with material from the beginning of the semester to the end of the semester, so that I can accurately say, this is what I think you're capable of during week 1, week 2, et cetera, et cetera. And for the most part, when I say that I'm establishing this growth goal, I'm looking at how much they're progressing with material from week to week. But a lot of third parties think, oh, that seems really hard to actually do all this data analysis. And let me say, to ease your minds, for the most part, with the growth goal, because a lot of students start off with very little prior knowledge, the growth goal actually ends up being a mastery goal. We just call it growth, because we're trying to push students' progress with material over just end grade. You get an A or something like that. But in general, I've had other teachers say, I've just implemented an overall score goal, and it seems to work just as well. Questions? So thank you, Caitlin. The second thing with the research question for the second part was specifically, how do we track and change the perception of success? And in general, what that came down to in the past was a collection of survey results that were given twice during the semester. So once right before the growth-based grading system started, and then once right before the final exam happened. And then I would collect all this data, normalize it, and then see what were the changes between the initial response and the final response. So not only am I collecting data on their content mastery, but also their perception of their success through the semester. And it was about a 20-question survey that had a scale from 1 to 6 saying, hey, do you agree with the statement that relates to your mindset in this class? So here are the results. And this was the first round of collection that I did for the actual content mastery within the growth-based grading system. So this was fall 2017, and I looked specifically in the context of our first-year students at the Early College Alliance. So students that are specifically not quite getting into college classes, but they're progressing. They're not our older students that are coming back for credits, but in general, I kept it small just to essentially look at the initial results. And what we found, or what I found, was specifically students who were invited to participate in this alternative grading system saw significant gains when compared to the students who did not participate, in that the students, on average, started at that midterm point with approximately 59% average mastery. And then by the end of the class, the collective group got it up to about a 72% mastery. So really 3 percentage points away from that 75 that the ECA is really focusing on. As compared to the students who were not invited to participate, that was a huge jump. Next slide.
Question.
Oh, question. Yes, sorry.
What percentage of kids decided to participate? I mean, did you have some kids that chose not to participate? Where would they be in that?
Good question. So with this first initial like collection, I think I had about 10 or 12 of the 28 participate, and then like two said no or did not come to that invitation. So overall, a lot of students usually are interested at least in that participation overall, and the numbers change depending on how I implement the study.
Were those two kids that didn't do...
They were excluded from all data collection.
Okay.
All right. Good question. Any other questions? That actually resulted in a different type of study later on, and I'll get to that in just a second. Yeah, definitely could have skewed as well as provided some future thinking that I will outline soon. Any other questions? All right. This is specifically the winter of 2018. So what I did from the first semester to the second semester was look at how does this system impact older students that had potentially moved on to EMU classes and needed to come back for essentially credit recovery for high school graduation. And we saw similar gains when we looked at the students who participated in the alternative grading system when compared to the students who did not, with the same analysis as before, that the students who did not participate or come to the initial invitation were excluded from the data collection overall. Unless there are questions. And then, as I outlined, what happens specifically when we take into consideration the students who are invited to participate but don't necessarily follow through, or the students who don't ever respond to the emails. And we decided that we were going to start a randomized trial to look at the differences between these two student groups. So this is the first time that we did it in the spring semester. And the spring semester at the ECA is a very special semester in the fact that we're a three-semester year. The fall and winter semester is 16 weeks. The spring semester is about 6 weeks. And it's usually reserved for our students who have not done well in their classes, have not gotten credentialed, and have not been approved to move on to EMU classes. So these students specifically had not only really low content mastery, but also really low mindsets and perception of success when it came to not only math, but also how are they progressing through the ECA in general. So to address the question that you asked, and to look at potentially if there were any factors I wasn't considering for outside of the initial analysis, we did a randomized trial. And in general, randomly selected about half of the population that was considered at risk to participate, half were just kept off to the side. And in general, this was the trends that we were seeing. So initial mastery was about the same, but the students who participated in the growth-based grading system saw gains, whereas the control did not. And overall, this was a statistics course, so it was extra special because I presented the findings at the end to be like, look, guys, I did math, just like you guys are learning. And those who participated thought that was really cool, beyond the fact that it was nice to see that the students that were participating saw gains. Any questions? All right. So then the next year, we did a randomized trial again. And then I opened it up to other math teachers within the ECA's math department. So how does this work outside of me being really motivated to help students specifically progress with their content? Sorry, guys. There's one thing that's a little off. You can't see it. Still can't see it. Well, regardless... This was a special semester in the fact that the gains were not as significant. We still saw gains, but the big thing that we noticed was whether I was doing the program or other math teachers were doing the program, we saw similar results. So this is my data with the whole randomized trial, and then the department outside of me just did the full invitation and saw typical results from what I was doing as well. So it seems like once you get the information, you can convey it across the board and still get success when it comes to within your classrooms, within your schools, et cetera. And then that obviously increased the student populations we were looking at. So for me, at this point in time, I was teaching our high-achieving students, so Algebra 2 was trig pre-calc, as well as algebra, and then other teachers within the department were looking at lower-functioning skilled students, so Algebra 1, arithmetic, and general number sense, as well as with our younger students. So I work a lot with 10th through 12th grade, and we also just at that point in time started a 9th grade program as well. And then this new round of data was essentially coming up out of the questions that you guys asked during conferences. And the big question that I got across the board was, why do you wait until the midterm to implement this grading system? And at that point in time, my gut response was, you gotta hit rock bottom before you actually can find success in something else. And to me, that rock bottom point was the midterm. But to really answer the question, I wanted to collect data on it. So for the last few semesters, so winter 2019, and then this previous semester, I looked at essentially rolling admissions into the growth-based grading program. And in general, there were several weeks of implementation, starting with the second assessment that students saw. So not the first one, but the second one to confirm that the student could be classified as at risk. And then I would invite students throughout the beginning stages of the semester until we got to the midterm, which was the original implementation of the growth-based grading system. And this was not randomized. So in general, I was just comparing the students who did not participate to the students who did actively accept the invitation and work on their goals. And interestingly enough, for the most part, outside of the second group, the gains seemed to be about the same. So if you think about essentially the students' growth rate over time, students who were participating after the midterm, at least it felt like, had reached that rock bottom point and pushed themselves even harder to make similar gains to the students who started earlier within the semester. And talking with other teachers who are trying to implement this program in their semester or their year, a lot of them ask, when should I do it? And I say, well, this is the data I have so far, but for me, a lot of students seem to respond better if you do it after the midterm or after some large assessment that says, hey, this is your low mastery so far. This is your rock bottom, essentially. And then, obviously, students who did not participate saw gains, yet, but not as much. Questions? All right. So that's the end of the data collection on in regards to content mastery, but there was that second piece with the survey and the mindset perception of students' the success. And at the beginning of the program, I implemented a survey that collected the changes between a student's initial perception of their success versus at the end of the semester. And I looked at essentially all the changes that happened between the students who were participating in the growth-based grading system when compared to the students who did not, excluding the students who were not necessarily following through. And there seemed to be, at least at the beginning of this data collection, a positive increase. Question?
Did the students that did not participate because they were not invited, they were at threshold, did they know about this?
They got the initial email, but for the most part, a lot of students don't talk about it. So it's kind of.
The students that were above the threshold that didn't get invited?
They knew about it in a general context. Okay. Like, there's this alternative grading system that this event likes to do with certain students, but if you don't get invited to participate, for the most part, she just doesn't think necessarily that you would benefit from it in this context. And so far, no students have asked about it outside of that one conversation. No students have pushed back. So overall, it seems like students are at least recognizing that not every solution fits every student, and they're comfortable with saying, hey, this is something that helps certain students, but maybe I don't need to participate. Good question. Any other questions? Question?
Yeah, I'm still thinking about the initial and then the final mastery average.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is the final mastery the average of the final exam or the
course mastery?
The whole course, quizzes, all the stuff.
Yes. Any other questions? Yes.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the time you start the prep. So for me, looking back to some of my students in my school, we do reassess. So if in 2 weeks, the student can reassess, and then we do the average of the 2 weeks for that space. So what I see, some of the kids, they are lazy, they are not competitive, they just want to have that pass and then move to the second level or grade. So they have that in their mind, okay, I will not study, I will not pay attention, then when I will have a chance to reassess and then get that pass. So will this apply here if I from that set mindset, I just made the pass, that's 75, and then with this program I will get it. So let me just do whatever I do in the first, second, third quiz, and then later on participate in that study and then get that 75.
So to be totally clear, the question is essentially how does reassessment play into this growth-based grading system? And if I'm hearing you correctly, are students aware of it at the beginning of the semester, decide I'm going to be lazy, and then I'll get this grade change? Got it. So in general, students are not aware of this until invitations are sent out. So at the beginning of the semester, they're not aware that this could happen. The second thing is that the ECA and YHI both use reassessments. For the ECA, it's a full grade replacement instead of an average. Yeah. So students have the potential to meet their goals on the reassessment if for some reason it doesn't go well. But the larger question of how does this impact lazy students who potentially might use this, they're not aware of it until after I implement the. Yeah. Good questions. Any other questions? All right, Kayla, next slide then. So this was the data collected on the surveys from the randomized trial in 2018. And it started to show that specifically results were all over the place. So beforehand, it was saying that students were not only increasing their mastery, but also they were essentially seeing themselves more as mathematical students within the first round of implementation. But afterwards, the results were all over the place, to be totally honest. So this is currently on the back burner in the fact that I'm looking at different survey techniques as well as how do you actually measure perception of success to potentially get more meaningful data. But at this point, it was hard to control for conversations that I was having with students as well as other teachers were having about mindset because it's such a big value within the ECA. How much of this data is specifically student actually changing perception of their success versus how much is them just reiterating something that I had said in class? So at this point, this was the end of the survey data collection, and if anyone has any great techniques for how to measure that, I'd be happy to talk about them. But as of right now, it is still a work in progress. Questions? All right. And it wouldn't necessarily be an education presentation without anecdotal evidence. So these are just essentially some emails as well as written responses about the program. But also I can emphasize that whether it's me or another teacher, there are two big things that essentially help you as an educator as well as students progress forward. The first thing is, raise your hand if you've ever had to tell a student, hey, there's no way you're going to pass this class. That sucks, right? In general, when you get to that point of the conversation, not only do you have to have that awkward conversation, but then students lose absolutely all hope. And based off of the anecdotal feedback that I was getting from students, not only did it help me avoid a really awkward conversation that essentially resulted in epic failure. So when a student hears that conversation, it's, why do I even come to class? Why do I even try anymore? If this is just going to be the end result of a fail, then I shouldn't try. So that helped me as a teacher moving forward in the fact that I could always have this end result of, but here's another thing that we can look at. Here's something that can help you. Don't give up. The second thing was a lot of students started to look at these goals as something that they could not only implement in my class, but also something that they could implement in their other content classes as well as their EMU classes. So a lot of students said, this was rewarding in the fact that it gave me a different way of thinking about my progress within a class, especially if I was performing badly. And in general, that, in my opinion, is worthwhile. Just avoiding that awkward conversation and then giving students the ability to keep going, even if the end result isn't an A. And that seems to be consistently something that I hear not only from my students, but other teachers. And maybe Caitlin can speak to that too. So are there any questions? Yes?
Do you have an example of one of the goals, the emails that you sent to a student?
Yes, and unfortunately, I think the PowerPoint is unreadable.
You're going to have to read it, I think. Because no one has x-ray vision.
No one has x-ray vision. So if you look at the electronic version, hopefully this is readable. But the first goal on the left-hand side says, this is your first email for the alternative grading system. As mentioned in the information session, you will receive a goal via email every week, and it is up to you to meet or surpass your goal on the quiz. If you successfully meet your goal for the rest of the semester, you will earn at least a 75% of the class. Then it says, hey, this is your goal, which for this student was a 50, and then it outlines specifically the steps that I recommend that they take, such as practice problems for all sections, complete at least 5 hours of practice in the next 2 days. And if you, at the end of this session, write down my email, I'd be happy to send you a whole bunch of templates as well as emails that I've used to send to students. Any other questions? Yes.
You said that you have been working on this for about 5 years.
Four-ish years?
Four-ish
yeah.
years. So have you tracked any of your students who are now in college to see how
Great question. So to be totally clear, it's been on my radar, and I have this long list of research questions about how I want to tackle the next stages of this alternative grading system. So it's on the agenda. It just hasn't happened yet. But I appreciate those types of questions because it really helps me think about.
We do have aggregate data, as you mentioned earlier, and when you disaggregate it by discipline, it doesn't really matter. About 90% of the grades of students receive in college or C or better. 54% of the grades are A. So, reading between the lines, clearly it's leading to college credit.
Right, but as far as like student attitudes about how this has propelled
that ongoing.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
Has not been answered yet at this point. Been a busy semester.
The email, first email, that student, he or she said that this will help him or her.
Yes, and anecdotally, it does seem to at least haunt them for a while, but I have not collected the data on it yet. There was another question.
So let's say a student meets the goal, like starts, meets the first two goals, does not meet the third goal.
So in general, there is the backup plan of reassessment of that goal, and in general, I'm going to say about 95% of students make the goal happen, whether it's on the first assessment or the reassessment. The students who do not meet that goal specifically essentially do not finish the program, and then the alternative grading system is essentially terminated. But for the most part, students do meet that goal, whether it's on the first assessment or the reassessment. But there are some times where you have to have a hard conversation with students with, didn't happen in both of these situations. How can we progress for the final exam and the end of the semester so that you can still end the class well, maybe just not without me changing your grade, essentially. Any other questions? All right.
Caitlin,
you are up.
All right. We'll do the microphone switch. Can you hear me? Is this helpful at all?
Yeah, it's good.
All right. Okay.
I'll speak louder too. I don't have the most projecting voice, so I'll try to be better than the party next door. I'm Caitlin Donnelly. I'm a math teacher at Washtenaw International High School, another school in the WEOC Consortium. And I want a show of hands from people who does standards-based grading currently at their school. All right. So I'm kind of tackling GBG from that lens because my first year at Y-High, I was new to SBG and did a lot of learning. And now I must say I'm like pretty ride or die on that. Like I think I would have a hard time working at a school that doesn't do SBG. And then it wasn't until learning about growth-based grading I saw some of the pitfalls, some of the cons to it that the growth-based grading really picks up on. So going at it from that lens and also can answer any questions about how we can use growth-based grading with international school, IB school as well. All right, so standards-based grading, saw a few hands. At our school, we do it based with reassessment, of course, and we've tried different things as well. So some schools, they take the averages of the scores. Some schools take the endpoint. We'll see what we do with Y-High here in a second. I have kind of a surprise slide for you all. So we grade in our math department based on every single objective or every single topic. So students aren't scoring grades just for like unit one, which often has like 10 different math objectives within it. That only kind of gives an overall score, not a specific. So instead we grade on every single math topic that they do. So for example, like something like exponential growth, evaluating 3D surface area, very specific things. Each one gets its own separate grade. The thing, though, is that every grade has more grades within it, so many grades. One thing I do want to point out is that we grade on an 8-point scale based off of the IB grades. So 8 is our 100%, 4 is our 75%. So if you see some of those scores pop up on this example, Power School, and those are kind of odd to you, yeah, they're kind of interesting, but they're based off the IB rubric. So within each of those individual scores, we keep track in the comments of all the students' scores within that. So for every single topic, so that exponential growth topic, students are receiving at least 3, sometimes 2 if it's towards the end of a semester, but at least 3 different scores within that. So we really take into account how students are growing with this a little bit, how students are consistently staying if they're already at that high level of understanding the first couple attempts. So just kind of giving you an overview of how we do standards-based grading here. So in this student's case, they got a 6, a 3, and an 8. So they started at like that A-minus level, dropped down to that C level. Maybe they thought they understood and didn't quite study that again, but the learning didn't stay with them. And then finally changed what they were doing for that last quiz, did some reflections, did some more problems, and then finally got to an 8 on the semester exam. So we, again, based our overall score for that topic on what we say is pattern and then growth somewhat. So if a student has these 3 scores, I'm going to do a countdown, a 3, 2, 1. Shout out what score you think they should receive. All right, is it going to be a 7? Is it going to be an 8? Keeping in mind, we'll just go with that. So in 3, 2, 1, what score are they going to receive?
8.
All right, nice. Y'all know a lot about SBG. Yeah, so we're going to give them an 8 for that. But that is considering that all the assessments are equal, which that's really, really tough to do. There's so many different problems you can do within math, some more challenging than others, especially when you're making those different objectives flow together. So yes, overall, they're going to get the 8, which is great. And it's wonderful if students grow. SBG, like I said, I'm ride or die SBG. I don't know if I can work in a school without it. But even with this, some students who aren't seeing that growth, it doesn't provide a lot of tools on its own to communicate to them how to grow. So that's where the growth-based grading came in this past year. Because even at our wonderful school, where, as Duggar talked about, we are highly ranked, we absolutely have students who really struggle, especially with math and their confidence with it as well. So I was really looking for a solution of how to really help students who are not just feeling overwhelmed in this one subject, but sometimes feel really overwhelmed with the rigorous curriculum at our school. They really have these pretty downer like mindsets after, especially when they get older.
First attempt, test, apple, they get a 6. Second attempt, it's still apple, different numbers, but the same basic test, they get a 3. They do the final, it's apple, again, the numbers, the names, different things have changed, but it's pretty much the same, and they get the 8, and then they get an 8.
So in terms of the kind of questions per the different assessments, that's where it gets tricky. We don't keep them exactly the same, so it's going to be on the same content. So it might be something about adding apples, per se. But it's going to be a different type of question, often using the different IB questions that work at that objective.
I'm just thinking I had a professor years ago, over 20, yep. 30, that you would take test and you would get whatever grade. Say I had objective 5 incorrect. So you're moving forward, you have the next test. And a lot of times he would like to put some of those objectives into the second test. If you proved that you could do objective 5 in the second test, he would actually go back and alter the first test. So you're basically doing the same where his was more of an individual problem. You're doing this the entire test.
Yes. Exactly. So, yeah, to what your professor did, what sounds like trying to really make sure that they understand the content, the concept, the content versus
grade that day.
Exactly, which is one reason I'm so into standards-based grading, especially for math. It goes really quickly. There's so much curriculum we're supposed to cover no matter what you're doing, whether it's Common Core, whether it's something else, and as soon as you have your test, oftentimes it's done, you're on to the next thing. And that's really difficult for students. I think it's difficult for teachers too. And then you just kind of leave it nebulous. Oh, they didn't get that, but now we're on to geometry. We're on to this subject. So I really stand by the standards-based grading because it gives students an opportunity to really finally learn content at their own pace. And it's not cut off, exactly. Yes?
I'm just curious how you plug that in. So to be calculated, because for our school we use Power School,
yep.
There and then exempt that's the first and second, and then they are not included in the final grade, or what are you doing in there?
So we keep track of everything in the comments, actually. So, and it's really tricky to explain to students and stakeholders, parents, by the way, because it's a little bit new. So this screen is just the top half of my Power School. It's a lot of entering, but it does feel good. I love data, I love analysis, so I get excited for it, even though it is a lot of entering grades. This score right here, this is about 13. That's in the Power School, that's where I put like the 6 or the 5 or the 8s. But I decide what that is from these scores within the comments, if that makes sense. So the only score I like enter into the scorebook book is one of these right here, but I figure out what that score is by looking at their attempts within the comment. It's not automatically calculated, no. Which I, to that point, as a math teacher, I have created some things to somewhat average it, but the problem with that is it's not always correct. So at first, if I have 2 attempts, I average the scores essentially to get that one on that grade book, dependent on what kind of questions were being asked. Sometimes, though, like at this point, especially if it really is showing that growth, it really is showing that the student gets it on that exam question wasn't simple or basic or anything, they get the 8, and I automatically put that in. But yeah, always looking for a system, but sometimes it really, that pattern is hard for the computer to sense. It's more based off of what I know about the different assessments. Yeah, great question though, yeah. I've tried it all the ways, yes.
If the student does the first attempt and gets a 7 or an 8, do they get to skip attempt two and the semester exam, or do they have to take them also?
They have to take them also, which they hate. And I get to a certain point, it's in a way, like, I'm so happy that they're understanding it quickly, right? There's good to that. However, the way I describe it to them, it's like, you have to defend your score. Like, you got it before, I need to make sure you understand it still a couple weeks later, which I can understand why they might be a little bit not happy about that, but it really is, if you knew it then, I'm guessing you're okay now. Let's really make sure and see. Yes.
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 Yes. September to January.
Which absolutely does happen quite a bit, especially within all the scores that we do. So say this student got like a 6, an 8, and then on that semester exam they were overwhelmed. That's a difficult week. They get a 2. Now we're not going to drop them all the way down to that 2 because they did really know it at some point in that semester. However, their grade is going to drop a little bit before that A, but not to the point where it's like a surprise. So that's one good thing about it, too. I know a lot of schools, like my high school, there is a lot of weight in our exams. And with exam week being like 7 classes and exams, that's kind of tricky. Then you're kind of surprised at the end of like, oh, I had an A the whole time. What happened? But with this, it's kind of cool. So while it really is reflecting where the student's at the end of the semester with that knowledge, it's not going to be a complete, like, you now failed even though you've been doing okay so far. Yeah, great question, because that's actually more common than the growth sometimes.
Can I kind of continue on your thought process? Like,
yeah.
So I think when I talked to my math teachers about this, part of the reason why there's been some attempt to go towards standards-based at some point, but their justification for not sticking with it is, while kids might have demonstrated mastery at some point, but then, you know, in Algebra 1A and then Algebra 1B, they now don't have mastery of that concept, so it's really not mastery, and I just wonder, how do you address that?
Yeah, so for certain topics, too, it is a little more difficult, and especially with the IB curriculum, almost all the objectives are interwoven together within the questions. So my answer to that would be to try to have them grade with different questions. So the older the students get to, we kind of change the format of the test so that we are making sure that for every objective there's like a layup question, more of a basic one, do you have this skill, do you not, a middle ground question, a classic IB question, then a really challenging one. So just having that differentiation within the questions, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of question making, but it really does pay off, so you can see clearly where students are at. Yeah. Yes?
Do you or the teachers use formative assessment opportunities in these attempts rather than just like a quiz or a test that's more summative? I mean, you might be able to get more reliable data with some formative assessment.
Yeah, and I think it's really helpful. So what I'm hearing is asking if we use some formative assessments as well in our pattern seeking for that final grade. Absolutely. We typically do about a quiz or an assessment in class every 2 weeks, but I know sometimes that can be really high anxiety for some students. So yes, to answer your question, not as much since we already are grading so much all the time, but especially for like retakes, I like to do those in a little bit of a less like formal way. Those are really formative and is included in this as well. Yep. And I use some of that formative assessment too, like if I'm between scores, because when I'm choosing these overall scores, I am at times making a decision that I really like to justify with evidence. So I think back to, or I find their formative assessment, I go, oh, like on this exit ticket, they really nailed it here. I'm going to give them the 5 instead of the 4 because I wasn't really sure. So that really weighs into one of my final decisions, too. Great questions about SVG. Great. So when I explain this to other math teachers who are also doing SVG, who are also kind of maybe have questions about SVG, I like to think about the bike model, because it really explains why we need to change the traditional grading, especially in terms of mathematics. So traditional grading, right, you are taking into account all the times someone fell off the bike. when our goal is really just to teach someone to ride the bike. So why should it matter if they've fallen off, if they've gotten hurt, if they have these awful experiences, when really all we want is for the student to ride the bike? So that traditional grading really doesn't really take into consideration that they finally rode the bike, and that's what we need for them to be successful in college career and anything that they're looking towards after high school. And then standards-based grading, it's great in that we are really just focusing on, can they ride the bike at the end? So instead of taking into account grading along the way, not looking at that growth pattern over time, we are seeing once they obtained the skill, they're good to go, we can send them on their way, I feel good as a teacher, and that's great. The problem being that I wasn't, at least when I first started with SBG, not always explicitly helping students get back on the bike, especially those who had really negative experiences with math that were then translating into that fixed mindset. So I really like this. I explained it to like my friends and whatnot too, whose schools are trying to figure out if they want to do SBG and now GBG. So I just like this metaphor because traditional grading, when you look at it, then doesn't always make the most sense in terms of learning a new skill. So growth-based grading does all the above, and I'm new to it, so I just started implementing it essentially this past month, but the first semester this past year trying to identify students, figure out who should be in this group. So it's new to me, but I'm already seeing within a month drastic changes anecdotally from my students. So this is like my basic slide. So where I'm at, I just invited students this past month, followed that format of the lunch plan. So I have my main junior class where I specifically took last semester too to kind of figure out what students I wanted to work with. And I noticed in my IB junior class that I teach that I definitely had some students who seemed like they had fixed mindsets, who seemed like they're getting a little bit burnt out by our rigorous school and IB curriculum. So that's where I started. And after doing some mindset tests, some conversations with them, invited them this past month during lunch. And one big thing I'm already seeing, I wish I took a screenshot of some of the emails I've gotten back in this. My students are awesome at reflecting. So when I ask them, hey, here's what's recommended for your goals this week, the emails I got back were like, and I told them they're a little bit too extensive, but like pages long. Like some of the most communication I've gotten from some
spend
of the students.
Spend more time studying math as opposed to emails.
Yeah, but I was like, they had a plan. It was really detailed. They're really excited. So far, I have just really seen a lot more engagement from students, a lot more confidence, because I think they see a way to improve now. They don't have to worry about passing. The threshold for me changed to that 70% because at the junior level, if they have a 70% or below, then they're on what they call like probation, which means they possibly may be asked to leave our school because they won't be able to obtain the IB diploma, which is like really big for a student who loves the school, has their friends, their whole social life. They've been there for 3 years. It's pretty scary. So I think that's a big piece of it too for our students. They are worried about that percentage exactly, so it takes them that load off to give them an, I don't want to say an out, but to make them feel relieved from that. Questions? And the big final thing, too, is I really care about my students who are struggling with math. That's why one of the reasons I chose to teach math, because I had so many negative experiences growing up. And as a teacher, even though that's like my purpose in doing this, I have not always been great about like connecting with some of those students who don't have that growth mindset. So it's been really good for me to hold myself accountable with this process because I'm actively emailing students. I'm actively making sure, hey, like you're gonna come see me after school, right? Like that's one of the things to help with your goal. Because with my 200 students I have, sometimes when we're true people, tired teachers, it's hard to make that extended effort, but I really enjoy this program so far because it's helped me to be just generally a better teacher and hold myself accountable to really be reaching out to the students who need it most. Great. So new to it, I love it. I hope I could give you a little bit of insight of how you can maybe implement it into your school. What I do doesn't match exactly what they're doing at ECA because our schools are different, but you can really take pieces of this wherever, whatever school that you're at.
All right, we're going to have a brief wrap up with some current extensions as well as the research questions that come out. And then I'm going to end by taking questions as well as giving you my contact information if for some reason you're very interested in potentially trying this in your schools, in your classrooms. So as something that Caitlin said and was asked about specifically with PowerSchool, is essentially how does PowerSchool work in the context of standards-based grading, and then how does PowerSchool work with this growth-based grading program? And for the most part, PowerSchool is hard to use, I'm sure, as many of you guys know. So my better half, which is my twin sister, she's a computer scientist, and she's working on a personal project to get essentially a growth-based grading gradebook implemented for me. In the fact that we want to try and get a gradebook that not only keeps tracks of all of these standards so that you can do a traditional standards-based grading system, but also can you get an automated system to do a lot of the heavy lifting so that a lot of it is freed up on your end. And that is currently in the works. So this is just like a demo of what potentially it's going to hopefully do in the fact that it's going to streamline the process between how are you tracking student growth between those standards, as well as can it potentially do a lot of the automation? So can it send out the goals based off of the data that it is tracking? Can it provide the recommendations for how to meet that goal? And hopefully this will be rolled out by the beginning of next semester. Keep your fingers crossed. She is a busy person, so we'll see how that goes. But with that being said, moving forward, what I plan on working on and what other teachers within the ECA and hopefully YHI are working on are specifically the question of have you actually tracked data in regards to student success in future EMU classes or even just future classes outside of the one that you're currently working on. And then the biggest one is essentially what happens if we try and do this not in a math classroom? Can it be essentially adapted to fit the English needs, the social studies needs, and the science needs? And we have some ideas at the ECA, but of course, if anyone is interested in doing that outside of the context of math, I'd love to hear about it. I'd love to help. And I'd love to see how this potentially can impact student growth outside of mathematics in general. But with that being said, I'm just going to give you guys our final piece of information, aka our contact information. Sorry, I volunteered your email address. This is my phone number, my work email. Many people know that I am a workaholic. So if you are interested in participating in growth-based grading in any shape or form and you need help implementing, you want other resources, you need guidance, you need help of any sort, please reach out to me or Caitlin. I'm volunteering your help at any point in time. And if you do decide to use growth-based grading in any shape or form and you don't need help, I'd still love to hear about it so that I can get more data about how I can improve the system at the ECA or how I can help other teachers who are potentially thinking about looking at this in their classroom. Are there any final questions? No? Yes.
At a residential facility. So when they take that 2% of kids that get booted or they're involved with courts, that's 100% of my kids.
Yes.
I would like to see how a program like this could benefit. It sounds like you're kind of more with the honors kids. And if your kids want to learn, not all my kids are so up on that because they've had so much failure, whether it be on them or circumstantial.
Sorry. Just generally speaking, we do have like students who are lower functioning, but not quite at that level, and we see about the same results. But I'd love to hear from you if you have it, if you do it. We'll be hanging out if you guys have any questions, but thank you so much for your time and patience.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think we're okay. Three?
Yeah, right under the wire.
Right under.
I thought it was 2:45.